This is a podcast from ABC Overnights.
And my next guest is an acclaimed actor who you may know from Once Were Warriors or from playing Boba Fett, but in his new series Earth Oven, Temu Adamorison hoofs it around the world, exploring various cultures that have a proud history of cooking delicious food underground. Tem, welcome to the show.
A very good morning. Very good morning, Paul. Thank you for having me. Wonderful, wonderful to be here today and talk about the show. So, yes, something quite exciting. I just want to thank especially NITV for allowing the show Earth Oven to be screened. Anyway, thank you again for having me, brother. Oh, all good.
No problem, mate. Well, for those of us who haven't been lucky enough to try food from wine, Tem, what is an Earth Oven?
An Earth Oven goes back centuries and centuries. It was a way of cooking. Of course, they discovered this when they started lighting fires, of course, that they started to add rocks, but now they needed the volcanic rocks that would keep the heat in. So basically, it starts with the fire, it heats the volcanic rocks, maybe for an hour or two. They get really white hot. You clear away most of the ashes, and then you put your food that you've acquired on top of the rocks. Of course, the meat and the thick stuff like a chicken or a turkey or a beef or a goat or a lamb or a whole pig, of course, you put the meat directly on the rocks. Or there could be banana leaves wrapped around it as well to enclose the succulent taste. Of course, the veggies go on top of the meat, and so that allows the veggies not to overcook. So it's quite a clever kind of process. And, of course, once you've done that, then you cover it. There is like a covering that you kind of have a little bit of a pit or a little bit of a hole. So sometimes as you cover the food, you leave a little bit of air to circulate. So now I'm talking about an earth air fryer of some kind of thing, because there's air flowing around it, if you think about it. Of course, the banana leaves go on top to protect the food. And then you quickly cover it with the dirt, sand, or tree from the bark in Australia up in Cairns. And in their case, and then you cover it with the dirt, and then you're normally quite thirsty after that process, and then you've got to have a little refreshment, wait a couple of hours, and then you've generally put the phone call out to the people, to the tribe, to the family, to friends. They normally bring a few more refreshments, and then you talk about the revealing of the hangi with the family and friends. Then you sometimes have a discussion about, do you think it's ready yet? Because it's all done by feel. It's all done by instinct. So sometimes that dialogue can go on a little bit longer. Eventually, you remove the dirt, the coverings, and they're revealing the food. And then you take it up to the table and start to sort of separate it. And then you finally say a little prayer and karakia to bless the food and everybody. And then you eat. And then there's not much said after that because they just make noises like, Then you let that settle down, and then you sort of go around again, normally two or three times when you do the earth oven, because it takes a little bit more of an effort. So, and then you find yourself having a big snooze afterwards. And then if you're like us over here in New Zealand, someone pulls out another refreshment, and away we go, and the guitars, and then the music starts. So it's a full-on day. It's a full-on day and probably night. Yeah. The wee small hours of the night, I'd say, and then generally, if there's any leftover, if there is any leftover, yeah. Well, you just go find an onion in the morning, and then you put the onion in the frying pan, and then you reheat some of the earth oven food, and you get this wonderful hash me gash kind of thing. I think there's a proper name for it, which I can't remember. But anyway, even that's so nice. The potatoes the next day are one of my favorites. Fried up, and of course you might have to add a few eggs by at this stage. But yeah, basically that's the earth oven. Of course, we see it in Polynesia, Fiji, Hawaii, Rarotonga, Tahiti, New Zealand as part of that, and also Australia. I had the pleasure of catching up with my dear, dear friend David Hudson, who's quite a very, very spectacular cultural, bicultural, very, very much in tune with nature. Wonderful didgeridoo, wonderful family, his didgeridoo playing is quite amazing and really gives you the goosebumps. So I met David way back on a movie called The Island of Dr. Moreau. So a lot of the show is really a lot about connection too, about that indigenous understanding that we have. David and I become very, very close. So reconnecting with David and Cairns, he took me out to these lava tubes. You know, we also can't have a program that's just basically looking at a fire and rocks heating. So while that's happening, we're out discovering the culture. We're out discovering people. We're seeing a bit more of the land. So the big thing is we're not in a studio either. It's not on a nice bench, not in a controlled studio environment where everything's clean and pristine. We get dirty. We're out there. We're digging holes. We're finding dirt. I thought I was going to be eaten by the crocodiles and the crabs and the jellyfish, but I survived. And, you know, to crescendo this earth oven program and in terms of the preparation, we crescendo to the family arriving and we all participate. And at the end of the day, I'll tell you, Paul, without a lie, I'd be quite emotional. Every host that hosted me and my crew, I'd be emotional. So the show has emotion in a way, and a natural emotion. We're not pretending it. It has music. Of course, the culture. We discover more about the culture. We realize that we're all just people. We're all just families, but we all just live in different parts of corners of the world. Mm. And we also love getting together. We converse over the food. We talk about the food. We reflect about what's the similarities of our culture. Love comes to the fore. So, yeah, at times I feel like I was traversing around the world a bit like Joanna Lumley. But I was like the Timuera Morrison Lumley traveling around the world, but we're getting into the food kind of things. I was going, gee, what a job this is, because I actually love the hangi too. I like putting down a hangi every now and then. So to connect with other cultures around the world, connect to see how they do it, and to learn again, it was just something quite special for me. And it was the big thing is I'm not a character. I'm not a Boba Fett in Star Wars. You know, I've got no character to hide behind. And even when Dave Hudson and I got together in Cairns again, there's, you know, we can sing, and when we sing, our voices really harmonize together well. We got a really nice connection there, and bouncing off one another in a natural way, no kind of scripted stuff. So I thought it was really quite special, very warm. Anyway, by the end of an episode, I felt quite warm after watching an episode. Going, man, this guy's quite a funny fella.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, I felt short here and there. Of course, you know, you can't just say, that's nice, that tastes nice. You know, I fell short a couple of times, and because I'm not, you know, a true kind of chef in the terms of the chef, but through my ignorance, we all learn through me. So,
Well, Tim, I actually wanted to talk about that because, by the way, this is ABC Radio and you're listening to Overnights. I wanted to throw you back in time to, you know, young Tim back in Aotearoa as a kid. Do you remember your first hangi, and have you had a more evolved palate since then, or is there food that you still love from back when you were a kid?
Yeah, I think one of the uncles got us together and showed us how to put it down. It's just one of the family members comes in. And also my mum's from a place called the King Country, so they put down the hangi quite a bit over there to feed everybody, even if it's for a birthday, could be a funeral. So, yeah, so, you know, we just learned by being with our uncles, really, and on the shovel. And it was just part of the farm kind of thing, too. Every Christmas we put on the hangi, so you just go in there and do your bit. And then after a while, the uncles sort of, they all pass on, and now I'm showing the younger fellas here. It is a bit of work, but, yeah, it's more about the getting together, really, and the responsibility, because with that comes, when you got to do the hangi, you want them talking about the food. You know, you can make a great speech, you can sing a great song, but they'll talk about the food a little bit longer. So really, what we call your mana is on the line. I've been, my buddy put down a hangi once, and he had some new way of doing it, and I was going shaking my head. Oh, I'm not quite sure if this is going to work, but anyway, he was heating his rocks with a bloody gas, with a gas kind of bottle with this gas fire coming out of it. I'm like, psh. He's going, psh, holy hell, you're going to burn us all with this gas thing. So anyway, we put this few turkeys in, a couple of chickens, and then we revealed the hangi, and it was still raw, very raw.
Oh.
So we put the oven on. Hurry up. The guests will be here soon. Oh. I'm eating this. I'm going, oh, this bloody sweet potato tastes like gas. Okay, it's a disaster.
Oh, damn.
It's a disaster. Now, back in the old days, he might have had to deal to himself. He would have been punished. He would have been punished back in the old days. So there was a step to this, but we let him off. We let him off. He tried a new way of doing it, so
yep.
It wasn't long after that I went back and said, look, bro, we got to do this again.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Just to regain your mana, to regain his self-pride. But anyway, yeah, I'm going on a bit there, brother.
Tim, you're absolutely fine. And I guess part of the appeal of an earth oven and the cultures that use them seems to be, you know, having a big group of people around, like you mentioned, having family and being able to do it away from, you know, big cities and big infrastructures. How good are you when you left to your own devices? Do you ever do any cooking on your own?
Yeah, well, I'm not too bad, but it's pretty basic stuff. I'm a boil-up expert. you get a big pot. You go find some pork bones or corned beef or bacon bones, and you put them all in the pot and you boil the shit out of them for about an hour. And then you find some watercress or what we call puha, which some people call it a weed, like green stuff.
Right.
Watercress is really good. Spinach. You want to add a bit of spinach if you want. The watercress from the fresh flowing spring river is the best. Then you put that in for a little bit, boil all that all together, and then you put some spuds, some potatoes and pumpkin and sweet potato in another pot, and you just boil them up. Well, not too much, though, because you don't want them too soggy. You just give them 10 minutes, and then you add them into the big pot, and there you have your boil-up, some bread and butter, and that's one of my go-to dishes. The corned beef is nice in that boil-up, too, so I'm pretty handy. But the thing is, I'm always feeding the family.
Mm.
There's always some feeding to be done, especially if there's a big family function. Someone's got to go at the back and just think about, okay, how is everyone going to eat? So somebody takes care of breakfast. Sometimes these Maldives turn up and they outstay their welcome, and then they're still here a bloody week later and my bloody fridge is empty. And you're going, how the hell are we going to eat this today? Then they start talking about what they're going to eat tonight. Oh, my God, this goes on and on and on. And I'm the guy who actually goes out and gets the bloody thing and makes it happen.
Yeah, it does the
and
work.
Some of them just talk about it. And I'm the one that actually goes into all the sweat. But at the end of it, that's what you do.
Yeah.
We have a big culture about feeding people.
Right.
It's to do with that word mana again. We also have a thing called the marae. So, you know, when we have huge family functions, we have these meeting houses. One is a carved house where all the formalities go on. Right next to the carved house is like a dining room with a huge kitchen. And we're blessed we can actually turn on the steam at our marae, at our dining room. We can actually turn the steam on because we live in a place called Rotorua, so we have the thermal activity under the ground. So we can turn it on with a tap. We can turn it off. So we can actually steam a lot of our food pretty quickly. So I've been involved with that in my upbringing. So we have... You know, like my uncle, he was a famous singer here. His name was Howard Morrison. You know, 10,000 people turned up to his funeral from all around New Zealand. But we fed them all, and we gave them all a steam pudding as well. So, you know, with that, and that's where the mana lies. You know, you got to feed your guests. Otherwise, it's your marae or your home doesn't come up to scratch. You kind of look. Yeah, anyway, it's not a good thing, put it that way.
I'm listening to you talking about this, and at the start of the interview, Tim, you mentioned, you know, doing all the digging and stuff. Basically, we see you in the show not just sitting back and eating food, but busting your butt, doing hard yakka, building the fire, digging the hole, prepping.
Yes.
Basically, you have to work for your meal. How much does the work you put into a meal affect your enjoyment of it, do you think?
I'm glad you noticed that hard work. I've still got the calluses on my hand from those shovels. By the time you've done all that digging... And all that burning and waiting and preparing and then covering, waiting hours and hours, I actually lost my appetite many a time. But I did get thirsty. So we just relax a little bit, have a few refreshments to replace the liquids that we had lost over the fires. And then we let everyone else eat first. And, you know, and that's what you do. You let everyone else eat first and then you go back and eat whatever's left over.
Right.
And where you get your kudos or your enjoyment as the one of the people preparing the food is when you see them eating. When the family's there, we're laughing, we're relishing the food, there's noises being made, and everyone becomes one. And there's a lot of love. There's just a lot of love. There's a lot of humor. There's culture. There's music. And we reflect on some of those similarities, those connections between our cultures. So, and that's what the show's really warm about. And very much so, I always got a little bit emotional just because of the time and the love that they showed us. So I'd always try and make a speech and say thank you to everybody at the end of our dining experience. So, I was just blown away. I just wanted probably the best job I've ever had, going around the world, eating earth oven food. And boy, some of it was spectacular. Even when it comes out, that's the best part, when you open it up and the steam goes away and you reveal the food. Ooh, I like to just grab a little bit right from the earth oven itself, just let it cool down a bit. I'd always taste the potato, a little bit of the pork, a little bit of the chicken, just to make sure it's all well done and that's all cooked well. And you can't beat that. Can't beat a big feed like a earth oven there, Paul.
That sounds delicious, and I am very, very hungry, so I'm going to run off and get something to eat. But I just wanted to say, Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us, and well done on the series, mate.
Thank you very much, and blessings to all your ABC listeners, and thank you again for having me on your show, Paul. Look forward to meeting you someday in the future.
You and me both, Tim. Tim Morrison there, whose new cooking show, Earth Oven, is streaming now on SBS On Demand. You're listening to Overnights on ABC Radio.